Welcome back to The Wrong Opinion Presents, a movie podcast. We are talking this week about Godzilla Kong, A New Empire, and Civil War by Alex Garland. We're going to talk first about Godzilla Kong. There's an X in there. It's a silent X. Took me a long time to figure that out. I told the lady at the theater I wanted to see Godzilla X Kong. I felt like an idiot afterwards. About 15 minutes into this movie, I texted my friends and a couple of people. I said I made a huge mistake. This is a terrible movie. 15 minutes later, it was still a terrible movie, but I was having the time of my life. When you go to this type of movie, it's exactly what you expect. There were... This is from a franchise, the Bryan Cranston Godzilla and then the Kong Skull Island. A couple solid movies. I haven't seen the last couple, King of Monsters and Godzilla vs. Kong, because I've heard they were kind of bad. And it's kind of a throwback to these old kaiju movies where, you know, 75 years ago, there'd be one great King Kong movie, and then 20 years later, a great Godzilla movie, and then there were 45 derivatives or spinoffs or sequels that were just not good, but still, like, fairly enjoyable. This movie was exceptionally enjoyable for that reason. I called it the Nickelback, the Creed of movies. The kind of movie where you're like, oh, hell yeah, brother. This movie, like, the more people talk, the more you realize, I want to see more of Godzilla and Kong. And this movie realized that. Every single movie of this genre has terrible, terrible lines. I wrote down some of the terrible lines, and then I realized that it just doesn't matter. Rebecca Hall, her title was Head of Kong Research. That's the funniest thing I've heard in my entire life. He was eaten by a tree. I don't want to die like that. Not by a tree. Like, what does that mean? The point being, all of these movies have this crappy dialogue. This movie did a really good thing for about 30 minutes where the people were just not part of the story. And that seems sort of obvious for this type of movie. You want to focus on Godzilla and Kong. But it had to have been 30 minutes. There just wasn't dialogue. It was those two, and then I don't want to spoil anything. Not that we're spoiling anything. There was a bad guy Kong and a bad guy Godzilla that were fighting against the good Godzilla and the good Kong who had to team up together. And just nothing from the humans. And I'm wondering if that is the way to go with these type of movies. This movie made an obscene amount of money in the first couple weeks. I haven't checked. It's up to almost 500,000. That's not very good. 500 million. And if you look at the earlier ones, the 2014, the Bryan Cranston Godzilla, I called it Bryan Cranston, I think he died 45 seconds in, $520 million, really good. Kong Skull Island, probably the best of these movies, $570 million. The 2019 one, a little bit worse. The 2021 one, you know, COVID passed, a little bit different. Actually did better than the previous one. So these movies just make money, you know? So having these exceptional actors like Cranston and Elizabeth Olsen and Brie Larson and Sammy Jackson and Tom Hiddleston and Rebecca Hall and then Brian Tyree Henry. Like, you're going to be upset about, you're going to be upset at these actors for getting a huge paycheck. And they don't really add a single thing to the movie. But do they really need to? They're marketing materials, you know? It's fine. A couple negatives. This movie just in general was filmed, it was filmed like a trailer. Like, lines got cut off. Every single line seemed like it was promoting the movie. The exposition was done in a really good way for me because I hadn't seen the previous couple, which lead directly into this one compared to the earlier two, which don't really. But that exposition makes it seem like literally a trailer, like you're trying to tell me what's going on in half a second. And then the scene with the Volkswagen, like, I think we've all seen that at this point. It's literally a Volkswagen ad in the middle of this movie. It makes the Barbie car scene look like, I don't know, an actual movie scene, which it clearly wasn't. My two favorite moments that were a little bit hell yeah brothery. Number one, Godzilla suplexed Kong. I might have that backwards, actually. Yeah, no, it's Godzilla. Like, literally a perfect WWE suplex. And then another one, Kong was fighting a monkey that he ran into. The guy started falling, like, oh, I'm gonna die. And Kong reached out and saved him. Heck yeah. Then the guy pulled out a knife and tried to kill Kong, who just saved his life. So Kong's like, okay, and Sparta kicked him off a cliff. I've never laughed harder in a movie in my entire life, in a spot where I don't think I was necessarily supposed to laugh. But in general, this movie was carried by the monsters. People did not really add too much to the movie. It was kind of funny that the just specific cliches of characters, just to a T, that they didn't even try to hide. There was the cool guy with the accent. He's got a knife and a beach shirt. By the way, the trapper, played by Dan Stevens, literally just Tim Roth. It was literally Pulp Fiction Tim Roth. And then you have the manic scientists who excitedly explains everything for our sake, not even the character's sake, but our sake. In this case, he was a podcaster. You got the smart main character who serves as our everyman moral compass, and that was Rebecca Hall. And then creepy kid who ties it all together with magic. None of it makes sense, but it doesn't really matter. I couldn't tell you right now what the humans were trying to do at any point throughout this movie. They went down to a world that exists below our world, but somehow has sunlight. I didn't get that. Maybe it was explained in an earlier movie that I missed. And then tried to find Kong to help him out. But then Kong went back up to the Earth to get Godzilla because he didn't need the humans' help because he's freaking Kong. And then the girl spoke to Kong and found a tribe. And they had a really nice line from Dancy from the Trapper about touching isolated tribes, how they always die when people go to them. So good thing to avoid those just in general. But I just couldn't tell you what the humans' actual endgame goal was. And the monsters, when they were quote-unquote talking, totally understood everything. So let's just stick to that from now on. Speaking of that, there's a little crackhead ape that was friends with Kong. That was my favorite character. It's on the short list of my favorite ape characters. I think number one is still Andy Samberg's Space Chimps. I don't have any great lines from this movie. I'm not going to do any bad reviews because, like, I don't know. The negative ones are just, like, not seeing what the movie is. The good ones are like, eh, you sure about that? It's a Rock'em Sock'em, like WWE with monsters. And that's exactly what it was trying to be. That being said, the greatest, it's on the list of greatest Oh Hell Yeah Brother movies. I think Fast and Furious, outside of number one, I'll qualify for that. I think the second Transformers, and then the first, and the Bumblebee Transformers. I think Bumblebee was actually fairly good. So the second Transformers qualifies, the rest were just too bad. I'm going to kind of try to explain what it takes to be on this list. So it can't be a good movie. So the first Transformers is too good of a movie. It can't be a terrible movie. Okay, so the third Transformers, just not a good movie. You take Megan Fox out of the movie. Pretty much has to be an action movie. I don't want to gender a movie, but it's got to be a dude's movie, you know? You know, he's a dude, she's a dude, we're all dudes. It's a dude's movie. Would you watch it on an airplane on mute and still enjoy it just as much? Is it a kind of movie while you're, I don't know, on your phone, have the TV muted, you're doing some kind of work or something, still enjoying it just as much? Is it just as good on mute? And does it make you randomly smile when a character does something sick? All right? So I've got the second Transformers. I'll go specifically Fast 5, 7, and then Calvin and Hobbes. That's not right. Hobbes and Shaw. I think Argyle is a little too oofy poofy. That's not a phrase or a word. I just made it up. But I think Kingsman can count. Kingsman was actually kind of good, though. Is Kingsman too good to make this list? And does Argyle make this list, or is it too fluffy? Once again, that doesn't make any sense. I kind of think Mummy, the first Mummy with Brandon Fraser, I think that might count. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen makes the list. The second two Batman movies of the 90s, so the Schumacher movies. Definitely Batman Forever. Maybe Batman Robin just sucks too. I don't think I've seen that movie in 15 years. And then you got movies like The Core next. Basically every Nick Cage movie for about 15 years there. But let me know. Tweet me at WO Presents. Let me know some other Oh Hell Yeah Brother movies. Roadhouse. Oh, Roadhouse makes the list. Roadhouse is the iconic one of these. A lot of 80s sci-fi movies on there. But let's move on to a different kind of movie. The best movie I saw all year. Civil War by Alex Garland. One of the best working screenwriters in the game right now. I think he's second tier director. That's not necessarily a diss. Like, sorry, you're not on Scorsese's level. I mean, that's fine, you know. But I think he's a top tier screenwriter. This movie follows two journalists. One a photojournalist and one, I guess he's a print writing journalist. You don't see him write a single time in this movie. And we'll get to that later. who are trekking through kind of dystopian America. It's kind of pre... The threat of war is in pretty much every town on the East Coast. And there's a little bit of desolation, but it's a little pre-dystopian. The world has fallen into, you guessed it, a civil war. The Western forces of California and Texas, which I believe was chosen intentionally, are fighting against a fascist president, played by Ron Swanson, Nick Offerman. When I heard his voice in the trailer, I think I kicked the guy in the seat in front of me out of pure happiness. That's obviously a joke, because I always sit in the front seat. Along the way, they pick up two stragglers. One is an older friend of the two who has been, you know, a journalist for a long, long time and just wants that final kind of rush, that final story, right? And one is a young girl who looks, she's 23 years old, who wants to be a photojournalist just like Kirsten Dunst, who was on her A game in this movie. I think this was her best performance in, it's such a different performance from what we've seen from her. She was so, so stoic. And I'm going to save that part for later because there's a scene in towards the end where she really shows off her chops. Now, this movie was way less of a political tool than I expected. I was worried that it was going to be that it was going to be preachy. Wasn't preachy. They specifically chose California and Texas to say this is not a political movie where these two different political ideologies are bonding together to fight against the fascist president of whatever role. As they travel to Washington, D.C. to get that final scoop, to final interview with the president, it seems he's on the brink of being defeated. They come across several little mini adventures. It's very episodic in that way. One of them is just absolutely beautiful. As they're driving, a sniper starts taking shots at them as they pass by some giant house plantation kind of deal. Although it's in the north, so probably not so much that. They find two other snipers kind of bunkered down wearing, grass suits. There's a name for that. I'm not a hunter. Joel, the print journalist I mentioned earlier, he asks the guys what side they're on. He kind of wants to know because journalists are kind of hated by this fascist regime. So they're just generally on the side of the rebels, of the Western forces. The sniper says, it doesn't really matter. A guy is sniping at you right now. This guy is shooting at us. We're trying not to die. That's what side we're on. How about you join us and don't die with us? And that was just a beautiful part of this entire movie. I said the same thing with Creator several months ago. It's just a type of movie where war has bad people on both sides. Sometimes one is led by a worse person than the other. That's natural. World War II, one of the sides is led by a worse person than the other. But every side is good people and bad people, and most people are just trying to survive and trying to, you know, exist. And yet, there are also psychos. Jesse Plemons, that dead-eyed Todd who shot the kid. It's been 10 years and I'm still ticked off at him for shooting that kid in the train episode. There was basically the tagline of the movie in the trailer, where Jesse Plemons, remember his name, he's wearing these, he's got this bleach blonde hair, red sunglasses, absolutely just perfect look to him. He's this just freaking clown wearing military camo gear, and he has been apparently butchering people. We don't know what side he's on. I'm assuming he is, I believe he's on the side of the, of America, you know, not the rebels. Just because he's incredibly nationalistic. But a line in the trailer, Joel says, we're American. Jesse Plemons says, all right, but what kind of American? That line was in a little bit different context in the trailer, which kind of made me upset because that was just such a great line. But then that scene ended up being better than I could have imagined. I don't want to spoil a single thing, but it's the kind of scene where you stand up and pump your fist and you're like, heck yeah, brother. And I think that was probably the odds on favorite for best scene in the movie until, you know, by the time we were 20 minutes out. But the final scene, it was the first one that I would really call a war movie. For the most part, this was a road movie. Okay. This was a road movie during a war following journalists. Kind of a critique, not necessarily criticizing negatively, but just a look into what journalists are like. Kirsten Dunst is a prototypical objective journalist. Joel is a storm chaser, but for wars, which is, it's, I think, the kind of negative connotation for that kind of journalist. And you never see him write a single thing. You never see him doing anything journalistic. You just see him running around. These people are just chasing that high. And it's clearly an important task that they're doing. They're showing the people of America what their government is doing to them. And that's noble. And Kirsten Dunst is very, very bluntly objective about that. Jessie, the young 23-year-old girl, played by Kaylee Spaney. She was in Priscilla. She played Priscilla last year. I recognized her since then, or from before then, but she was absolutely incredible. She is a photojournalist looking up to Kirsten Dunst. Her name is Lee. I'll call her Lee from now on. Jessie asks Lee if she gets shot, if Jessie dies, would Lee take a picture? Lee says, absolutely. That comes into play twice more in the rest of the movie. I don't think that's necessarily spoiling anything. Number one, because I'm not going to tell you what it is. And both of them are shocking in different ways. And number two, it's a kind of scene where you see it and you're like, okay, so that's going to, something's happening there, right? I've seen a movie before. So most of the movie is a road trip movie following these characters, very character driven, about the importance and ego of journalists. Okay? The final scene of the movie is the only one that's really, really a war movie. One of the characters starts breaking down in a way that we haven't seen them to that point. I think it kind of shows that they know it's going to end, that they know something is going to happen, and it's closure. So that was a really smart move. And I'm excited to spoil this once we get to the year in review. But the final scene was the only one that was truly shot like a war movie, where we're following like chess pieces moving closer and closer and closer to the end goal. And just constant terror for most of this movie. We have, it's a very thriller vibe, not necessarily a thriller movie. It's as much as war movies can be thrillers, where we're just constantly wondering what could go wrong, and it probably will go wrong. And the last scene is when it's at its full, you know, we're hearing AKs in our ear and watching bombs being dropped. But through it all, we're watching it be shot literally picture by picture for the most intense of the scenes. And it's something that I think is hard to explain, because you've seen it before. I think it was done in this movie where a scene is progressing and then it stops to show us a snapshot of what the characters are taking a picture of, only from the most important moments. Done before. This is one of the best ways I've ever seen that happen. I think in terms of production, story, technical work, acting, writing, this was the best movie I've seen all year. I think Dune Part 2 is the epic version of that. And then I really loved Love Lies Bleeding, but I think this surpasses both. The best line of the movie, bar none, 100%. I need a quote. Don't let them kill me! Yeah, that'll do. Might be spoiling you a little bit, but you don't know who died, so... second one that kind of applies more towards the vibe of the movie. Jessie says, I've never been more scared in my entire life, and I've never felt more alive. As she follows these two veterans, she realizes, like, we just are enjoying watching people get shot and almost die, right? Which is just the crux of the movie. This movie had some split reviews, a couple hundreds. RogerEbert.com, of course, gave it 100 because they are the smartest. Roger Ebert, his legacy lives on with great reviewers. The Rolling Stone, so many people tried to make this a political movie. The Rolling Stone, this review just made me feel bleh. They said that the only question is whether this movie wants to explore or exploit our state of the nation. I don't think it's either. This has nothing to, I don't think the state of the nation matters in this movie. And I just think that because it's so... It's not just set in the future. It's set in 2024, just an alternate version of 2024, right? They don't have flying cars. It looks like 2024. So people are more prone to say that it's a commentary on today, on what real life is like. It's not supposed to be that. Just stop trying to look for politics and everything. It's frustrating. Go watch more movies. For Godzilla, I would recommend it to... Anybody would enjoy Godzilla. It's just straight up. There were kids in the movie. I think it's probably kid-friendly. There's a little bit of, like, you know, fake blood. I think some people definitely enjoy it more than others, but nobody's gonna be like, I hated that movie. It'll be like, oh yeah, you know, this is whatever. Civil War, I think, if you're the type of person who tries to find politics and everything, I would avoid watching this because you're just gonna be annoying on Twitter. Outside of that, there is a little bit of gore, not necessarily gratuitous or constant, a lot of bad language. So if you have little baby ears, whatever. Point is, go watch this movie. If you hate my wrong opinions, tweet me at WL Presents. We're going to be back next week. I know that I'm seeing the new Guy Ritchie movie, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Might catch Ghostbusters. Heard it's bad. You know, I also heard Godzilla Kong was bad. Monkey Man, big movie that'll probably be on next week's docket. But big one coming up soon is Challengers, coming out in 10 days from the day of recording. One of the movies I was most looking forward to this year. One of the all-time trailers. Make sure to catch Star Wars and Spider-Man. They are being put out at AMC over the next couple weeks. Fall Guy in a few weeks after that. Be sure to check out Comic Central on Snapchat, Hooper's Lane on YouTube, and our sister channel, Wrong Opinion, Useless NBA Trivia, and Garbage Rankings. Really excited to talk about this new Guy Ritchie movie. But until then, peace out.